Okay, so I just prepared a few slides. So I just introduced what is a laminar forest, so we can be all on the same page, and then I will continue on the blackboard, so we can have a slow discussion. Okay, I'm based in Copenhagen now, and this work was done with Alexei Boyarsky, Oleg Grusharsky, and now I will recap what is World Dark Matter and what it does to the structure. Okay. This is like a plot from a chart that shows the effect of World Dark Matter on the structure formation. And okay, this is a very qualitative plot because you can see there is no scale. But just what I want to point out with this is that, okay, here we have the case of cold, warm, and hot dark matter. So what happens is that usually people, I mean, often people talk, at least at this meeting, I've been talking about a number of halos produced in the cosmology that you can see on the top. In fact, in cold dark matter, we have produced many small halos. In warm, the warmness of dark matter suppresses this very small structure. And in hot dark matter, you can see that the suppression is even larger. The halos are not the only structure that we can observe in the universe, because actually there are a lot of, I mean, there is this cosmic web of filaments that we can also observe, that is depicted at the bottom. So you can see that in the same way, in cold dark matter, you have many small filaments and that are on the smaller scale suppressed. I mean, the smaller filaments are suppressed in World Dark Matter, and I mean, in case of hot dark matter, only the larger structure are left. So first of all, I want to let you notice that although the small scales are changing, the larger scales are preserved in these three different cosmologies, because I mean, the larger scales stay the same. Now, I mean, this was a bit qualitative, but what I want to say is that, of course, one can make it more quantitative if we go to the matter power spectrum. So in the case of cold dark matter, you will expect something to go like here, like this, where you have, and this is will be cold dark matter. Now, we do have constraints on this matter power spectrum on the larger scales, and these constraints come from the CMB and then from the surface of galaxies. So the question is, what happens to this initial matter power spectrum if, I mean, what happens after, I mean, at the smaller scales that we don't probe with the galaxy surveys and with the CMB? Okay, on the smaller scales, the power spectrum could be many things. Could go straight up, or it could flatten, or have a sharp cutoff. And so this is why we want to use laminar alpha forest, because we want to see what happens in this range of the K space.
Or it could oscillate. Or it could also
Yeah,
oscillate.
I mean, we want to see if there is some feature respect to the case of cold dark matter. I mean, for us, World Dark Matter, I mean, usually people refer to World Dark Matter like the case of a thermal relic, in the case of a particle that was created or decoupled relativistically, and then became not relativistic at radiation-dominated epoch. And
Does it oscillate? Small scales. Small scales, if you the dark matter is coupled to radiation.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, dynamic.
Okay.
Sorry,
But then
generic oscillation.
I mean, yeah, you can do as many, you can do, I mean, if you change the model of particles, you can have many features, no? For example, if you take a warm dark matter case, it will be like an exponential cutoff, but then if you consider a stellar neutrino case, you can, and you consider that, yeah, you can have like a more shallow cutoff than poor warm dark matter. So, I mean, what happens, the details depends on your particular model. Okay, I don't know, maybe we can switch off the light because I would like to show a movie. Shall I just Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Here. Oh. This is just a movie from, I think this is the Aquarius simulation. I mean, again, the scale is not important. What I want to point out is that, I mean, there are these cosmic web filaments, and this is a pure n-body simulation, so this is only, only dark matter. Okay, in this case, it's a case of cold dark matter. And what happens is that if we start at high redshift, for example, the simulation starts at redshift 50, you see that the distribution of dark matter is also almost homogeneous. And then due to gravitational instability, this distribution collapses into this structure that has the shape like filamentary structures. Now, this is in cold dark matter, so there are no baryons here. And I mean, in this case, it's quite straightforward. But then the problem is that actually we want to compute, see what happens when we have baryons, no? Because baryons in the case of, for example, an alpha forest, that's what I'm going to talk about, baryons are what we observe. So this is a pure simulation with the cold dark matter. And here inside I show a movie from another simulation that is the Igor simulation run. And this is produced by the Virgo collaboration. And the Virgo collaboration, it's a collaboration between the University of Durham and the Leiden Observatory and many other universities in Europe. So what happens is that you can see that there starts to be a complication with respect to the previous case. Because, okay, this starts at redshift 20, the gas is quite homogeneous, then the gas collapses into the gravitational wells due to dark matter. And so you can see that, okay, here the color encodes the temperature of the gas. So you can see that there are these bubbles here of hot material here, that because the gas can also have a temperature that doesn't happen with dark matter. And so this gas has been heated and by the process of structure formation, because here there are winds from galaxies and from active galactic nuclei that can make this medium very hot. So this is a problem, it's a problem in the sense that can introduce a bias between the dark matter distribution that we want to measure and what we actually measure, that is the baryonic distribution. Okay, so now, I just want to tell you what is the Lyman Alpha Forest. So the Lyman Alpha Forest is the way we observe this distribution of baryons. Because what we have is that, the universe, we observe in the optical, looks quite empty. There are a few galaxies, and we see the emission of galaxies because there is star formation going on there, and there is emission from stars. But then, as I showed you before with that movie, actually the space between the galaxy is filled with some medium, but this medium has very low density, and also, and there is no star formation going on in this medium, and that's why we cannot see it in emission. But Lyman alpha is a way to observe this medium at high redshift instead in absorption. So what we have is that, Lyman alpha is the name of a transition in neutral hydrogen, that is between the ground level of neutral hydrogen and first excited level. So it happens in the ultraviolet in the lab. But now in a astrophysical environment, here on the Earth, we see it, we observe it into the optical and not only ultraviolet, because this transition is happening a different redshift of the absorbers that have been redshifted. So, to summarize, we have a distant quasar that for us is like a background probe of the light. We are here on the Earth, and so the light travels across the space that looks empty because there is no emission, but then actually the light is scattered away from the line of sight due to Lyman alpha transition. And this scattering happens at some redshift, hence this absorption feature is redshifted in the spectrum of the quasar. Because, okay, here I show the corresponding spectrum of the quasar. This is just an artistic view. So we have here a quasar, here we have a peak that is associated to the clouds that are intrinsic to the quasar. This is a Lyman alpha emission that say that this quasar is around the redshift 4. Then, bluewards of this peak, we have the Lyman alpha forest, that is this collection of lines. It's a forest because all the lines are clustered on top of each other. And this is mainly due to hydrogen, to neutral hydrogen. Then inside the redwards of this peak, there are just a few absorption lines that are due to always to intervening metals, but the metals have different wavelength of transition, so that's why, I mean, the metals can be anywhere, but you will see them very well here because there is no hydrogen. So, so that's how we observe this neutral hydrogen. And also I want to remark that we only observe the part that is that is neutral, because in fact by redshift 6 most of the gas is mainly ionized. I think at redshift 3 we have one neutral hydrogen per 10 to the 5. So it's a very high level of ionization, and that happens because the Lyman alpha transition has a very high scattering cross section. Oh, now I want to show what all these spectra looks like in a realistic case. Okay, this is a real spectrum, but it's a special spectrum because it's very high resolution and very it has a very high signal to noise. And this spectrum was taken for 18 hours. So what happens is that very high signal to noise. And so what happens is that there is this this is the Lyman alpha forest, and could look like a random distribution of a random field. But actually, if you enlarge, you see that there are these structures that are like some permanent structure that you see. No. Here I show the data that have been used so far to constrain the warmness of dark matter. And actually there is also this other survey, BOSS 3, but it's very similar and I don't show it for simplicity. Okay, what I want to say is that, we want to see the cutoff in the matter power spectrum. Okay. We want to see a cutoff in the matter power spectrum, but actually what we measure, as I said, is a flux from the quasar spectrum. So what we can have is the flux power spectrum instead. Power spectrum of the flux. Oh no, maybe I'll show somewhere. So in the case of warm dark matter, what we will expect would be to have something like this. Some power spectrum that then has a cutoff here, that is, if warm dark matter dominates, this cutoff will be due to warm dark matter.
How do you know the flux? Because that spectrum you showed, most of those lines seem to be saturated. They were clipping off at the bottom, right? So how do you know what the true flux is?
The flux, when I talk about flux, I talk about transmitted flux, because I don't care about the continuum level, because the continuum level has information about the quasar. So what I take, I have an estimate of the continuum, and I take the ratio, and I take a quantity that is between 0 and 1. So
you've got some scale-dependent information. I'm not clear.
I'm not
end up this completely. How do you actually extract a power spectrum from that spectrum, which seems to be a lot of saturated lines of hydrogen?
Okay. The fact is that if you have a signal, you can always compute the power spectrum, right? Whatever signal.
The structure there, yes.
Yeah. So exactly. So you have like. This flux is a quantity that is between 0 and 1. And
this is
redshift space, right? Yeah, this is redshift space, also Hubble velocity equivalent. So what happens is that, that's all the information that we have.
It also with internal motion, that's not all.
Yeah, this velocity is related to observation, because what you observe is the wavelength. And because you know that the transition happens on Lamanoff forest, you can have a translation in terms of velocity. But of course, this velocity has both information about Hubble velocity and peculiar velocity. So it's a distortion. So what happens is that, that's the information you have.
So you have a power spectrum and velocity. I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Then how do you go from that to a spatial?
In position space. Yeah. Right. Okay, because
I would expect there to be a huge amount of redshift space distortion because of the internal motions for a start.
Mm-hmm.
Plus the fact that the intensity of these lines is not well measured because there's too much hydrogen in those clouds, they're saturating, so you don't really know what the flux was that is irradiating them.
No, I agree that the relation between the density, the matter density, and the flux is highly nonlinear,
yes.
So it all works like a clipping. It means that you clip the very small structure and the very high density structure you don't see in the Lamanoff forest. No, I agree. That's but the question is how you go to velocity. Well, what you do is that you assume a cosmology, and then you can. If it's dominated by the Hubble expansion, you can translate from velocity to space. Then you can assess the amount of the fact of peculiar velocity by running simulation. This you can do, right?
But you have to assume the cosmology in order to construct the power spectrum, which is characteristic of the cosmology.
What you do is that you assume a cosmology. Okay, so you assume some model, okay? And then from this model, from some black box that in our case are cosmological numerical simulation, you can extract a power spectrum of the flux. No?
Yes.
So that's, and then you can do for many models.
This is for the idealized cosmology with some matter content that you have specified.
Yes, yes. So you specify lambda mass, lambda.
So how does that connect? Sorry to be, don't understand how you get a power spectrum mm-hmm. of this without assuming the answer beforehand. I just don't get it.
But then you include over very large grid of models there.
Including warm dark matter.
Yeah, of course.
If you actually analyze this, assuming the warm dark matter model.
Yes.
And then what do you actually match to? You don't have gas in your simulation.
No, we do have the gas.
I know, but you don't construct the Lamanoff alpha spectrum from that and compare that.
No, we do have. What we do is that.
The power spectrum.
Yeah.
Not the velocity space spectrum. We have to still do the velocity to.
No,
space
what we have is that we have a box snapshot of the simulation, and we extract a line of sight from this box. So, for example, this is the box of the simulation, and so we have been looking. Through this box through parallel line in this direction, and then along each line we compute what the FV looks like along each line, because we know everything. We know the density, we know the temperature, we know peculiar velocity.
Compare that with the realization that you have got there. That's one possible realization of a large possible ensemble.
We don't compare with the realization, we compare the power spectrum, that is the same information without two phases.
But you will have some cosmic variance in the power spectrum, right?
Yes.
In the modeled power spectrum.
Yes.
So how does that compare with you have only one spectrum there. There are only two or three such spectra.
I was going to talk about the data, but the data in the low resolution we have a few thousand line of sight, and in high resolution we have a few tens.
Yeah. few tens now. I know, yeah. Because they're also used for measuring deuterium, so I know about
them. Maybe the much higher resolution, the one from the
tens. Those are very high resolution, mm-hmm. And they're in damp systems.
In any case, that sample variance will just show as an error bar.
Yeah, so that's exactly my point, that there is a sample variance. Mm-hmm. Is that folded into your estimate of the power spectrum that you extract from this?
I mean, the sample variance on the data, because we have few lines.
And you have a sample variance in the theory as well, because it depends on what line of sight you're choosing through a Gaussian line of field, right? I mean, obviously it depends on which one you choose.
I mean, but I choose many. I mean, but I extract many of them, like.
Yes, so you get a band of power spectrum.
Yes. I get a distribution. I mean, I get a power spectrum with some error bars, so the power spectrum will be something in between.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, what happens? We do also do resolution on the large scales because we want to be sure that the box we are analyzing is big enough, that we are inserting enough modes in the box. Because we could do, if you take a very small box, you could do that you are, for example, ended up in a very density region, and that's not representative of the universe.
Let me ask, last question in a different way. Supposing you chose a different cosmology than the one that you ought to match to. Supposing I choose a cosmology without warm dark matter.
Mm-hmm. So cold.
I still will get a model power spectrum with some variance.
Yes.
In that case, I'm trying to get a feeling for the systematic uncertainty that must be involved in your not having picked the correct cosmology in order to compare with the data. Here you know you're trying to get at warm dark matter, you want the power spectrum for warm dark matter, so you can in principle run a cosmology warm dark matter and compare its realizations of lines of sight with what you observe. That's fine, I understand that. But supposing we don't know what the real cosmology is, whether it does have warm dark matter or not, you agree, right?
Yeah, okay.
So supposing I pick the wrong cosmology, wrong meaning in the sense of not corresponding to the real world. Okay. Then what would happen? Because we don't know a priori whether there is warm dark matter or not.
But I mean,
isn't she just making fortification? It works or it doesn't work.
It is not, because
it
there is a
bond. That there could be some
because you're unfolding. Unfolding is a very tricky business. You're looking at the convolution of three unknowns. Okay? You don't know many things about this. You don't know the matter content a priori. You don't know the primordial spectrum a priori, right? And in particular, you don't know various distortions that could have happened to your spectrum a priori.
No, but why?
Assume that the spectrum is perfect. Okay. Let us assume that.
I think we should continue and then maybe
I think you guys, you run a. I don't think the cosmological parameters or the primordial power spectrum is an issue because you normally run a big grid. But this question you're asking, we actually had to deal with it very recently where. You were thinking about σ8 distortions,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So could we take a warm dark matter simulation or something similar to that? Or in this case, we were looking at the simulations that people had done, but with running of the spectral index. Could we use that as a proxy for matching onto a model where you had a little bit of dark matter dark radiation interaction?
So that's what I'm saying. There is a degeneracy in what you assume.
If the distortions you get from your model are like very different or very large, then you probably want to go back and run a simulation again. But if you restrict yourself to like a space of models that look like warm dark matter cutoffs, then you're probably doing fine.
Then you feel you're being consistent. But that does not exclude the possibility that a very different thing could show you the same thing. Because it's a convolution of several unknowns, so there are possibility for degeneracies.
Yeah. I mean, maybe this is cool, I'm not sure, but what happens is that we are not trying to reconstruct the shape of the power spectrum from the data directly by inversion.
But I'm saying, to what extent could warm dark matter be mimicked, let's say, by a gradual steepening of the power spectrum intrinsically, for example?
No, but I agree. Of course, there are degeneracies.
You know that that's not what's happening.
For us, I mean,
they're perfectly degenerate.
Exactly.
It's just based on arguments of fundamental physics that's...
What is the argument based on fundamental physics? Nobody has told you in fundamental physics what the power spectrum shape is.
That's not what she does. I think she does really just...
Constraint. If there is some fissure on the smaller scale in the primordial power spectrum, so if this fissure is coming from a model of fuzzy dark matter, warm dark matter, or if it's some other process that is suppressing the power here, that's not the problem in this context, because, I mean, we just want to see this fissure here, if we can detect it astrophysically or not. Okay, anyway. I was here. I was showing you the data, and these are okay. These are the data. So as I said, we have the flux as along a line of sight, and that's what we observe. This is a quantity between 0 and 1. That means that it's clipping all the information on the very small delta density. I mean, value of the density and the very high delta. And but that's what we have. So what we do is that we compute the power spectrum from this signal, and if we have one dark matter, we will expect a cutoff at a small scale of the flux. So let's see to the data that we have what they say. Okay, there are, if you see this plot, okay, this is the flux power spectrum versus K. And so K large, small means large scale, K big means small scales. And also, if you give a look, maybe you will notice that there are two different data points here, because there is this sample here that is from SDSS that these points stop here, so that means that they don't go to very high K. That means that they don't go to small scales, and also they have very small statistical error bars. So what happens is that these were taken for the first time, I think, more than 10 years ago. So Seljak and other in 2006 put a constraint on World Dark Matter, because in World Dark Matter you expect to see a cutoff. You don't see it, so you say, okay, I can put a limit on how much the dark matter is warm. Okay? Then we have another set of data here that is... this is also the line of redshift. So that means that this sample is between redshift 2 and 4, and this other sample is between redshift 4 and 5.5. So what happens is that in this other sample, you go to very high redshift, very high K, so you sample the small scale. In fact, this data sample comes from Mike and Iris, and hence these are high resolution spectra. And also, we have very big statistical error bars, and this is due to the fact that we observe the universe just along a few line of sight. Because, as I said, in SDSS we have thousands of line of sight. That's why the error bars, statistical, are small. But in Mike and Iris, we are only around 30 line of sight, so we have large error bars.
Sorry, but which the type of point? Triangles or full or squares, what do they indicate?
No, I think they indicate the redshift, because sometimes they mix, so the author of this figure, that is VL, tried to differentiate the mixing using different symbol. But it's data here are all Mike and Iris, and this data here are SDSS. Just that, for example, this point here have a redshift 2.2, and this other point that are, what's called, filled square is 2.4.
These are luminous red galaxies? You know?
No. This is Lyman Alpha Survey. So this is the flux power spectrum versus K.
1000 megaparsecs is still Lyman Alpha Survey. I thought these were from galaxies.
Okay. Ah, yeah, because the unit.
Just multiply by 100 to get
megaparsec. Yeah, for going to megaparsec, you have to fix the cosmology. Yeah.
Oh, the, I didn't see the units of K.
Why is there so much spread
in the data?
Why there is so much spread in the data? Which are data? These ones? These ones?
Yes.
Which? All of them?
What was the question?
It's different in redshift.
Ah, yeah, why they are going up with redshift? This redshift?
That's what they're trying to show. So having redshift, it's a higher amplitude.
Okay.
Is there any sense in which the data should agree with each other?
I mean, what do you mean? I mean, these are each symbol is the flux power spectrum as a function of k at different redshift. So, for example, this is redshift 5.4. These black triangles. This other one is 5. And of course,
these are the redshift of the wave.
Sorry. No, the fact is that as you look back in time, the universe. As you go look back in time, the universe is more and more optically thick, and so that means that the optical depth of the universe of the gas is changing, and also you have a different this transition in flux power spectrum. This is related to the tau f of the gas.
It's been shifted up, right, just to show that
it shifted up. No, because it's related to tau f, to the optical depth of the gas. Because if you look back in time, the universe is expanding, and also the universe is getting hotter because there is this reionization. It's getting hotter, so that means that the medium becomes more and more transparent, and so the optical depth is changing. Yeah.
So
this cat in the data, there is a sharp line in the lower,
You mean this? Yeah.
What happens to the right of there?
Yeah, it's that it's the resolution of the spectrograph that you cannot see the smallest because you just don't have the eyes.
So I have a question. So for example, these diamonds are at redshift 2.2, right? The lower
this.
Ones, right? And so I don't understand why at these high scales or low k's you have some diamonds which are really high and then it goes down and then again it goes up.
But I think I'm not an expert on this kind of data, and also I think, as I said, that they have very small statistical error bars, but that doesn't mean that the systematic are small. So
So you don't have any handle on the systematic.
I mean, no, people are trying to model, of course, systematic, but I mean, I don't directly work on this data, but you can have evolution from silicon and all kind of systematic that this can affect this data. And this, of course, introduces some dummy variable, I mean, that you have to marginalize. The systematic, which handle you have on the systematic.
Yeah, because there is somebody who is asking patiently to
I guess you're probably going to go here, but it'd be really good to show people the CDMW, the benefits to this, because this is delta F, right? So the fact that this rolls over is nothing to do with your figure on the board, which is the true power spectrum.
No, but it has to do with this other figure.
Otherwise, you might think that looks like
walnut matter. What I want to say is that, there were data authors that were VL et al. And Irsich et al. That were saying, we use this data, we see a cutoff, but this cutoff is all due to baryonic physics. Because, I mean, as you said, I mean, naively, you could say, cutoff, that must be world dark matter. Actually, their interpretation was like, no, this is due to baryons. And the reason is that, as I said, the baryons are heated by the... the baryons are heated by the process of structure formation. So, what are going to ask? So what happens is that because we have the flux, we compute the power spectrum of the flux. No? So we have the power spectrum of flux with K. So what happens is that if you have, let's say that we have some some medium with some temperature. Let's say that we have a temperature, I don't know, 10,000 Kelvin, okay? And this the flux power spectrum that you obtain with that temperature. Then let's say that instead you consider a temperature that is higher. Then this will change this picture, and you will get something like this. And this is like 2 × 10⁴ Kelvin. So what happens is that the difference in the property of the gas is changing where the cutoff appears, and this is also in cold dark matter. I mean, also assuming cold dark matter's cosmology, actually, you do get this cutoff. So what I want to say is that when you look to this cutoff here, there is some degeneracy between the cosmology, because there can be a primordial cutoff coming from the initial matter power spectrum, and the temperature of the gas.
What's the physics of the turnover in this case?
Yeah. There are several reasons that are mainly two. One is the thermal Doppler effect, the fact that this is an absorption line of the gas, but the gas has a temperature, right? So when you observe it, what happens is that it broadens to Doppler effect due to this velocity of this gas, yeah. And that's this cutoff now, because if you have a line that is broadened by the temperature, then of course it's like a suppression of power, and so hence you have the appearance of this cutoff. I mean, for example, here you will have some line of absorption, but then if you go to this other model that is hotter, the same line will be larger, and then so it's like having less power on the small scale. So,
just to guide our eyes, lambda CDM must give a prediction where the curve should be lying. So where are they?
No, the point is that, yeah.
I mean, in this sense, you can compute. Huh? You have lambda CDM with standard W max parameters, and in principle, that gives you a prediction what this delta square should be. Where is it? So then one could choose, you know, look if your curves deviate from that or not.
I mean, but as I said, it depends on the state of the gas, no? Because, yes, lambda CDM gives me a prediction, but then I add this information about how hot is the gas, and I get anything.
So how could you then extract any deviation from lambda CDM if you cannot even say where lambda CDM is lying?
No, exactly. So this is the point of our work that we have revised, because these authors here, VL and Irsic, has put very strong limit on the warmness of dark matter. And we have said, look, because of the temperature is so uncertain, we cannot really rule out anything here. And so actually, your constraint should be less tight.
Justin has a question.
For your high resolution spectra, is it not possible to correct this thermal broadening by measuring the width of the line?
No, it's a generate. It's the same. The width of the line is a generate with the size of the structure. I mean, with the lack of structure. So.
Because there's a thermal broadening, and then there's something to do with the intrinsic dispersion of the structure that you don't know.
I mean,
I would have thought for different IGM temperatures, you mm-hmm. get a different spectrum of line widths. Mm-hmm. Like, but are you using the line widths in your analysis? Because I think you're just using the velocity.
Mm-hmm. Ah,
So do you use information about the width of the line?
No, yeah, I understand. This is actually part of our work, that it's ongoing work. Because in this part, I mean, I'm talking about what people actually have used so far, and it's just a flux power spectrum. But of course, once you have some spectra, you can do many things with spectra. There are several observables, so you can extract line widths.
So in principle, a smart analysis might be able to tease out some of this temperature information.
I don't know, because actually it's a generator also with the size of the structure, because as I said, this is one reason, one of degenerates is this thermal Doppler effect. But then there is another reason, that is the pressure smoothing. So the fact that if the universe was very hot in the past, then it has a temperature, hence it has a pressure, and the pressure is smoothing in the structure. And so these two things also degenerate.
Yeah, there is another question.
So do you actually run, so it's to go from just dark matter to gas, you know, that part, is that done with hyper-simulations?
Yes.
Okay. So does that mean that there's like all the parameters of the baryonic physics, like the thermal history of how reionization happened, right?
No, I mean, we try to model it, but it's in a simplified way. I mean, at least that's what we have done so far, what other people have done so far, that you use, I mean, reionization happens, I mean, it's a complicated process that happens at different scale, because it presumably proceeds from inside out, from a more dense region to low density region, and so it's not that the universe is all reionized at the same time. So instead, we choose, I mean, what we are doing is that, I mean, what we have done is that we have this optical thin simulation that all the gas fills this ionizing background at the same time. So there are a number of simplifications in the model, that is this thing that we don't model in very much detailed reionization. Yeah.
Last question before you continue,
sorry,
at least for 10 minutes.
This is super interesting, but I don't really have this rollover, so it's great. Can you get any useful extra information also from Lima Beta and Lima Gamma?
No, yeah, I mean...
I don't understand the question.
Yeah, okay.
Not only the answer.
Okay, Lima and Beta, please.
Yes, I don't understand the question.
So you have different transits. So basically Lima Alpha is just this 2-to-1 transition of the electron in the hydrogen atom.
Yeah.
But there are higher order transitions
from
higher energy states, and they produce other radiation. So you see all these forests of Lima Alpha lines, but you also see also a forest of Lima Beta lines.
Shorter
wavelength.
She's on the right hand side of the metal
scale. It's a different wavelength that they are not
overlapped. Well, that's what I don't know. That's what
yeah, for example, this is Lyman emission from the quasar. For example, here you see a small dip, a small. Bump, and this is Lyman beta emission from the same quasar. And so what happens is here, this transition in between is all due to Lyman alpha, and then you go to higher, to lower wavelength, and then this is a mixture of Lyman beta plus Lyman alpha. So that, yeah, people usually, when they say refer to Lyman alpha forest, they only refer to this part because it's easier, because it's just Lyman alpha. But
now 10 minutes without interrupting.
No, please.
I did wrong block, which still measures that.
Consider, this is the basis for the claim that there is a limit on warm dark matter by V letter.
I understand that.
If you don't understand that figure, then what is
that supposed to be? That is true.
You don't understand. I don't understand that figure. I can't understand how they can get a limit from that. It seems to me that there are at least three degeneracies. You talked about the
thermal Doppler.
Maybe she's going to say that there are actually...
No, but actually, I mean, I don't have so much, because, I mean...
Let him say what she has to say.
Thermal Doppler.
Right, because I think what she's...
And then there is the degeneracy with the size of the structure.
No, I 10 minutes is not a lot, right? We have still...
And this come from this come is coming from thermal history.
Yes.
By thermal history, I mean that we should know the temperature of the gas before, I mean, the latest observation on Lyman alpha happens at redshift 6, because, I mean, with this redshift, and, I mean, you can observe because it's about the neutral hydrogen level. The neutral hydrogen until redshift 6, this logarithmic plot of neutral hydrogen. And so you are here, and this is redshift 6, but then when you you go beyond that at higher redshift, it's all optically thick. So what we should need to know was about the tails of how this process for ionization is happening, because what happens is that there is the universe is dark, is cold, and it's ionized by the structures, and then the universe is expanding, so the gas is diluting, it's being ionized, and then it becomes optically thin, and you can see the Amalfa forest. So what we need to do is that we need to know will be how the universe was, the temperature of the universe, the integral temperature of the universe, not only the temperature of the universe at redshift 5, where we are measuring 5.0, but all the integral, because we want to see how big the structure become, because
so how did we let all deal with all these unknowns?
Okay, what they do is that they make a number of assumptions. They say that, okay, the temperature... Eh?
Yes, I would have guessed that, yes.
No, what I mean, they make some number of assumptions on the way the temperature behaves. They say, the temperature cannot jump. And they consider some kind of thermal history that they believe is plausible.
I mean, just to be fair, they have a temperature density relation, uh-huh. And they marginalize over some of the parameters in there, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the fact...
No,
but can I say... Ah, right. Right, but can I say one thing about this? If I can cancel this... I mean, these details of the temperature was exactly what we were talking on in our paper, because what we have done, okay, this redshift and this is a measurement of the temperature of cosmic wind density. So this is the temperature at delta equal to 1, okay? So what they do is that they find at high redshift, they find some value of the temperature that is around, I don't remember, 10 to the 4 Kelvin. And then this is redshift 4.2 and 4.6. And then at higher redshift, they find here that the temperature should be low. They found an upper limit, like around, 5,000. So 5,000 Kelvin.
This is from data?
Yeah, from data, from the ICBL. And then this redshift 5.0 and 5.4, okay? So then they say, okay, but actually we don't believe this temperature because the result of the temperature is too low. And then what do we do? We assume a power law behavior of the temperature.
It's about the limits from the line broadening. This upper bounds come from what? The breadth, the width of the line?
This is the result of the analysis of World Dark Matter.
How do they get the bound on the temperature?
Because what they do is that they build a likelihood function that becomes depends on some parameters like tau naught. Okay, gamma, this gamma is another parameter of the temperature. And then there is the mass of World Dark Matter. Okay, now they have also other parameters, but I won't list them. Let's say that they have these parameters, and then what they do, they maximize, they have other parameters like this, yeah. They maximize the likelihood, and then they draw density contours around the likelihood, okay? So what they find is that if they do analysis bin by bin, at low redshift, they find some temperature at 10 to the 4th Kelvin, that at low redshift, at high redshift, they find something that is colder.
What is the physical observable that gives you the temperature or upper limits on it? Is it not the width of the line?
No, it's a flux power spectrum.
A flux power spectrum.
But it's related to the width of the line.
From the observation of the width of the lines, right?
I mean, it's...
Maybe you're measuring something. What is it that you're measuring?
I'm measuring the flux power spectrum.
You're not measuring the... You're inferring that from something else that you're measuring.
No. We are measuring the flux.
You're measuring the flux power spectrum. You don't measure anything.
I mean, it depends on which level you're looking to.
I'm asking what is the actual quantity you're measuring from which you infer that?
The flux?
Yeah.
Like a function of... I measure the quasar spectra. So that means I measure the flux as a function of velocity, because I translate this information in wavelength into velocity.
Why don't you refer this conversation for later. Let her say what she has to say to this interment, and then we continue discussing.
Finally.
But please give your message.
No, the
you of course seem to be not convinced by their analysis, so you did another analysis with a different result. Go ahead and give your result.
No.
Without the interruption for 5 minutes, 10 minutes is too much.
No, but if people don't understand, though, it's good.
No, but I mean, you can understand later, but at least tell your message. Yes, what is your message? Say your message, and then we can return to other discussions.
No.
What is your message?
Yeah, the message is that the constraint, because they got this constraint, mass of world of matter, more than 3.3 kilo electron volt at 2 sigma level. This was the constraint from VL. This constraint depends on the behavior that they assume from the temperature, because if they do an analysis bin by bin, they get that they cannot constrain the world dark matter. I mean, it's the same like SDSS. From SDSS, you get that the mass of world dark matter at 2 sigma level is 2 kilo electron volt. So you cannot improve this result if you use a bin parameterization. It means that if you analyze the spectra in each redshift independently. And so what they do is they say, okay, because this result is so low, we don't believe this result. So the we impose that the temperature should be higher, and they impose it through a power law behavior in redshift. And so what we say that this is not the right way to do this analysis, because you shouldn't impose a behavior on the temperature, no? Because this could come from different things. It could come from could be a legitimate first of all, we argue that this low temperature can be a legitimate value of the temperature, but also this spectra, this data could have been affected by systematic bias. Because they are higher redshift, so they, for example, they are treated differently also in the original analysis from this one. So you cannot impose, because what is interesting is that this limit is valid independently on the cosmology. This is not a temperature that you get only in world dark matter cosmology, but you also get in cold dark matter cosmology. So what you should do is, if you don't believe this data, you should take more observation, more data, if you think the problem with your simulation, improve the simulation you're doing, change the simulation you're doing.
What is your message?
Is 2 keV is reliable, 3.3 is not. But how did they get 2 keV?
But this is your final message?
Yes, the final message.
This is assuming a thermal.
What is that?
Right? A thermal relic.
How did that come?
Ah, yeah. Okay.
Assuming a thermal relic.
Oh, no. First of all.
How did this get 2K? How did SDSS get 2K?
Okay, first of all, this result is SDSS, and from our analysis, we are compatible with this result.
You agree
and,
with that?
Yeah, we agree with that. Also analyzing the high redshift, data, and this happens because, we allow the temperature to change independently, bin by bin, and we don't impose power law behavior, and that's what we get.
That's how you get the
yes.
So you, but did SDSS do that, or this is your
analysis? No, but the SDSS is different, because it's another set of data that is lower redshift.
What you are saying is that your claim is actually the limit is 2 kV, not 3.3 kV.
Yes.
And
yes.
This is for a thermal relic, because of course what you are measuring is actually an effect of the spectrum. If you would have a different spectrum, which is not entirely thermal, as it happens in many neutrino, sterile neutrino models and other things, then you would get a different mass. But in any case, this is for a thermal thermal
spectrum. The power spectrum would look different,
yeah. Of course, and there are many different variations of this. But this
there is a one-to-one relationship.
Yeah,
no, there is no one-to-one relationship.
For sterile neutrino?
No, only if
for a standard Donaldson-Widrow mechanism, there is a one-to-one.
I mean, but if there is a resonant production...
It depends on the model, because it's not...
Yeah, it depends on the model.
Right, but this, if this is thermal, then...
Incidentally.
For the ceramic, you know.
Yeah. For whatever this is, we are not discussing what...
Incidentally.
It's assuming a thermal production mechanism, which will result in the typical power spectra that they are fitting.
Yeah, thermal equilibrium.
Can I ask one question?
Yeah, incidentally. Yeah, please.
So the result of Viel et al. Was from 2013, but then afterwards, I mean, in 2015 and later, there was some other work.
For Mirsic, yeah. And they did the
same. Even higher.
No. Yeah, yeah, right, right.
Yeah, it was a recent paper like a few months ago saying 5 point something.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but
five.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe they chose another parameterization of that.
Let her answer now.
Okay. There was this work from Irsic that where they analyzed the same data set, and it's the same group of people because Irsic is a collaboration with Matteo. They redo the analysis on the same data set, and they to get some other result. Okay, nice.
So the same assumption of the temperature?
No, they are doing a bin by bin analysis, but now because it's the same group, now we are also redoing the same analysis. What they change in this framework, they change the parameterization here. But then, we also want to change other astrophysics that is relevant, and we are working on this now. And then there was this work from Bauer et al., but this was from BOSS3. And BOSS3, it's quite similar to SDSS, because, I mean, it's the follow-up of SDSS. And I don't think I have the plot here. I think the constraint of the put, they're actually kind of the same like the one that were before, because they expressed the analysis in terms of sterile neutrino mass. So when you change from sterile neutrino mass to warm dark matter, I mean warm dark matter relic of two. Or three corresponds to around mass of sterile neutrino of three. For from resonant production, yeah. So I mean, if you have all the strong neutrino, there is a non-trivial translation from one model to the other.
Is not exactly.
Yeah, exactly, because
it depends on how you generate this.
Yeah, and so the constraints that I have is this one that I show in the parameter space of sterile neutrino, and the solid black line on the top is the case that pure warm dark matter. Because this is the models that correspond to pure warm dark matter.
So this is
yeah, and this is like there is this other parameter that is the mixing angle. And what happens is that the result is not fundamentally different from SDSS because it's always if you translate in warm dark matter, it's always around 2 kilo electron volt. But what I want to say, I wanted to talk about, because you asked about the shape.
More minutes and then discussion.
Okay.
Whoever wants to remain, we'll discuss more.
But I can't even,
we finished about 5 minutes.
Yeah, answering to your question, you are saying, but you consider the specific shape of the matter power spectrum. Okay, here I want to show the transfer function for different models. I mean, this dotted line is the limit from VL of 3.3 kiloelectronvolt. This dashed line is our new limit that is 2 kiloelectronvolt. And this is the pure warm dark matter relic, pure thermal relic, okay? But then on top of that, we have plotted several sterile neutrino models with different leptonic asymmetry parameter, okay? And so you can say that, for example, our model is excluding this blue line that is the 7 kiloelectron V model with L6 is R to 0, because this is like just too warm, because what is important?
This is the lepton asymmetry 10 to the minus 6, right?
Yeah. And so this, it's, you know, because what matters for structural formation is especially the IK, the small k, because what happens in the process structural formation, the power goes from the large scale to the small scale. So what happens on the large scale is more important. So this model is excluded, for example. But for example, our analysis are reopened this parameter space because, for example, this model that are L610 and L612, these two are now possible models, not plausible, but they are allowed. Also, if they intersect at the other time, because that doesn't matter. I mean, what matters is what happens on the large scale. So. Yeah. And
okay, let us thank. Are you done?
Okay. Yes, I'm done.
Okay, let us thank. Now, whoever wants to remain for more questions. Questions?
Could you explain just briefly? You mentioned the idea that the pressure of the gas could wipe out some structure that was there, say, from the dark matter, but is not there in the gas. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly what I was saying. Okay, this has been demonstrated at linear level. It has been demonstrated at linear level with linear computation, but also, with the simulation, like last year, has been shown explicitly that if you get a medium that was very hot in the past, then the structure gets bigger. And I think it's quite straightforward, no? Because you have an equation of gas that is ideal equation of gas. So the temperature governs the pressure. So in the case of a hot model, you will have more pressure on the baryons, and so the baryons will stay larger. Yeah.
It'd be useful to see, like at a given redshift, what the power spectrum of the dark matter looks like. And another line of the power spectrum of the gas, for example.
Yeah, but this can be done in simulation, and it's done. People have done this. Yeah.
What is the typical, just I have no idea, what is the delta rho or the density contours in these structures? Are they in the linear or non-linear or whatever regime?
The more you look in the past, the more you look into small structure, because, as I said, the
density contours, you mean?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say, density contours, because I was saying
it's non-linear. It's outside the range of linear
properties. But it depends what, to which, yeah, but to which observable you're looking to, right?
Shiva just wants to
I'm interested.
No, I think you want to know just...
if it is in the linear regime or non-linear.
For the perturbations, for cosmic perturbations,
right, how
in the linear regime or the non-linear regime, these scales, I think, are already non-linear.
But how do you quantify non-linearity? For example, I will look at an observable, specific observable, and you quantify non-linearity respect to that observable, no?
Yes, but I'd like to understand what kind of structures these are.
Density contrast over 1, that's what you want to know.
Right. What kind of structures are
these? You want to know the specific delta. The fact that the specific delta you are probing depends on the cosmology. The fact is that... the cosmic web of filament spans a range of densities, and then when you look with an alpha forest, back in time, you are selecting different interval of density or density contrast.
I think it's much simpler. When you see filaments, it's already non-linear.
For example,
8 megaparsec turns over to non-linear.
But for example, the argument of Huang et al. For linear structure is valid. It was verified from simulation. It's valid. And this argument from Huang et al. Comes from a linear argument.
From a linear.
Yeah, and the redshift 3 still works.
Yeah, at high redshifts, of course, you can go from higher redshifts than
you are still.
That's what she said.
There still is practically linear.
No, I'm not saying. I'm saying that for some, what I'm saying, something different, saying that for some observable, you can still use the argument from Hilliard theory, and they're still valid, but I'm saying everything is computed with n-mod, you know? So we do it, we're not doing a CMP. So in this sense, the computation is not linear. No, the point is that, in this sense, it's not linear, yeah. But of course, the more you go, the more you forward the evolution, the more linear it becomes.
Any other question? Okay, thank you very much.